The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, we're on.
We are?
All right. Welcome to the True Wealth Show. This is your host, Dave Littlejohn, bringing you the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. In studio with me, of course,
Matt Dixon.
Matt.
Yes.
We have got to find a way to like crank it up. It is, I don't know what it is, but I feel like a little bit like the market today. Started on a high, but yeah. I'm fading, and now it's late in the day. I'm going, man, we got to bring the energy for this show.
We need like a portable coffee maker or something where we can just, on the way here, shots of espresso. Just liven it up.
Okay, we could do that, right? We have been talking about, so much lately going on in the markets. And so we got a number of things that we're going to cover in today's show. Some interesting ones around economics. Some of it definitional, but I got to throw out a heads up first. Take a look at your watch or take a look at the calendar, right? If you're on your computer, you can look in the lower right-hand score of the Windows machines, okay? If you have a Mac, I don't know, right? Because I don't use those.
Yeah.
But bottom line is I see a date of April 12th, okay? Now, turns out Friday is unusual this year.
Why is that?
Well, Good Friday is going to fall on Friday that would be the 15th of April, which is historically and traditionally tax day.
Oh, yeah, huh.
Right? But it's also a market and federal holiday. So with all of those shut down, we get a whole extra weekend with which to scramble to get your taxes filed by the 18th.
Ooh.
Right? So on Monday, that's also going to be the deadline for contributions for 2021 into Roth IRA or traditional IRAs. Okay. So you've still got a little time left to get your personal retirement plans funded.
And we've seen that a little bit today. A couple people scrambling.
We've still seen people going like, oh, snap.
Yep. Right?
Like that got out of hand.
Maybe that's why we're so worn down.
It's every year we should just mark this week on the calendar in red.
Okay.
And CPAs everywhere, okay, my heart goes out to you.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Okay, right? You guys are officially in the two-minute red zone offense right now. It's the full, you know, goal line D, doing the best you can. And my heart goes out to you because I know how exotic that is. For us, it's we say all the time, right, there's no such thing as a financial planning emergency. Well, there might be emergencies in finance, but not financial planning emergencies, right? Mm. You done messed that plan up if you got an emergency.
Right.
Okay, because there should be contingencies upon contingencies if that's what we're doing. But, look, real life gets in the way every now and then, and you find yourself going, oops, right? I'm a little delayed on that. I better hustle. Well, there we are. So we got to get those retirement plan contributions for your IRAs and so forth in. All right.
Yes.
And here's a little trick that you ought to know. Are you eligible for an IRA?
Okay. There are income limits.
So this is a trick question, by the way. Right? Are you as an individual out there eligible for an IRA? There are only two things that disqualify you, typically. Maybe three if you want to get technical about it. One of them is you're under the age of majority and you can't write a contract, right? You can't sign for yourself. You can still have an IRA. You just need your parents' signature to help.
Yeah. Okay?
But you need to be currently under the age of 72 based on current tax law, although that is in flux, right? It used to be 70 and a half.
They keep moving it up. People keep living longer.
Keep shuffling that around. So that's one. And then what's the other? And if you're out there and you're pick B, you're holding your hand, and you're thinking to yourself, you have to have earned income.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other one. This is, and yes, it has to be earned income from employment. It doesn't count if you have dividend income or if you've got rental property income or something like that. It needs to be earned income. Now, there's another special exception. You know what it is?
Well, with the Roths, there is income limits.
So hang on.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a trick question.
Oh, you're going further into the weeds.
Still a trick question, right? If you are married and you don't make an income, but your spouse does,
ooh,
you can still contribute to an IRA because as a married unit, spousal contributions are allowed. So you may not have earned income, but if your spouse does, that counts.
Yeah.
So then the question, and I phrase this very carefully, is who is eligible to have an IRA? And not a Roth IRA, an IRA.
Oh.
And the answer is everybody.
Yeah.
That meets those criteria. Okay. But can you deduct that IRA?
There's income limits on that.
Yeah. The answer is maybe, right? It depends.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's so many variables.
It depends. The deductibility has to do with your current income levels and your participation in an employer-sponsored retirement plan. Mm-hmm. If you don't have an employer-sponsored retirement plan, then yes, you can deduct your IRA unless there's something weird going on, right? If you do, then we're going to look at your income levels and then decide whether or not it's deductible. Okay. And the limit's actually fairly low as to whether or not it's deductible. You know, like $110,000 or something for a family. I don't know the number. Don't quote me on it. I have to Google it too because it moves around. Like every year they change it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a librarian, not the library, right? So I know where to look for it. But the trick here is the Roth IRA, not everybody's eligible for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you've already hinted at it, Matt. Why?
Because there's income limits.
There's income limits. And those income limits, same story. I'm not going to give you the exact ones, but it's somewhere in the high 90,000 range to the low 200,000 range for a couple. If you're a single person, the limits are lower.
It's like 125, I think,
yeah.
If you're single.
And what happens
is... Up to 140, but then it's like...
And then you're ineligible because you make too much money. And they call the gap in between, like, why is there like two different numbers? And there's this range in there. It's a phase out where you can deduct part of it, and there's a formula for it, okay?
That part.
So if you make below the threshold, you're allowed to have it. If you make above the threshold, you cannot. If you're somewhere in that weird zone, then you can deduct or you can contribute part of it. And so they say you're eligible for a certain amount to go into a Roth IRA, okay? And if you want to get more complicated than that, see me after class. But I got to tell you that... You're kind of running out of hours, right? You're going to reach the 11th hour here. It's a Tuesday this week. The markets are already closed. You've effectively got Wednesday, Thursday, and Monday if somebody's willing to help you. And at that point, I'm going to say, if you call me on a Monday, like we better be really good buddies because I'm like, what are you doing? You are lighting us on fire asking for this to get done on the same day.
Yeah.
Because there's no such thing as a financial planning emergency. Okay. Glad we had this talk. I feel better.
You
How about
tell
you?
Him, David. You tell him.
I just think it's so important. This is such low-hanging fruit. I've had this conversation a few times recently that the secret to becoming wealthy in America is not a secret. Drives me bananas, right? Spend less than you make. And there are a few basic statistics out there, things like... it's hard to be a single parent, okay? Like, it just really is. And so statistically, it's like graduate from high school, get married, then have kids. If you do it in that order, your probability of financial success escalates radically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter your race, ethnicity, gender, any of those identity politics issues right now. It's just those things are a big deal, right? And it makes sense, right? Well, first, if you don't graduate from high school, a lot of employers won't hire you at all because it demonstrates sort of a lack of commitment. I don't care what your circumstances are. That's what they see, right? So, okay, you got to get like that first basic, hey, the education was free. For the most part, if you show up and don't screw up too badly, you're going to pass. So if you can't do that basic stuff, we have to really start asking questions. Now, there might be some of you out there going, well, wait a second. What about Phoenix or alternatives and things like that? Look, I'm painting with the roller here. There are exceptions to everything, and there are people that have circumstances that are tricky. But we're saying broadly, statistically speaking, that's how this goes down.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then the idea of get married before kids. Kids are really expensive, and if you're doing it on your own, it's very, very challenging to not have that support.
Well, and the daycare piece too. Like, yeah, if you're on your own, that's really,
really hard. Really hard. And I'm not, this isn't politics, right? This is just reality check stuff. Mm-hmm. We can talk about the how it happens or whether or not we're going to support people and all those other things another time in another program, right? I'm just giving you the data, right? Yeah. So, but if you do those things, then your probability of success escalates a lot. And then it's behavior management, right? Things like spend less than you make and consistently save.
And how many
invest.
Times have we seen that sink the boat too? Where like if you can't get that piece down, it really just carries over into everything.
So it's funny because it's true.
Right.
And it's tough because I don't know about you, but this is sort of genetically wired for me. But again, another conversation. I've
Is
had
it
this
the
many
shiny
times.
New object syndrome?
So there's more than that.
Okay.
There's shiny object syndrome. There's also something that, okay, here's one I'm totally going to bait for the break, right? Something that poor people do and broke people do that wealthy people don't do.
Ooh, and I don't know what it is, so
yeah.
I'm curious.
I'll tell you, but we take our break first.
Okay.
All right, stick around, and when we come back, this behavior that rich people do that broke people don't. Just like an internet headline. That and more when we come back. This is
okay.
Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to The True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, that's the music. We're back. Welcome back to The True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Matt,
yes.
If they missed the first segment, how do they catch us?
They should probably check out the podcast once we post it tomorrow.
That's it. And it will be available at
littlejohnfs.com.
Indeed. And also, just subscribe, right? If you're a podcast listener, you can subscribe. We're on
Because we're
Amazon,
everywhere now, right?
We're on iTunes. We're all over the place. If you really want to go find our hosting site, you can find us under Blueberry, right? Not spelled normal, though. It's spelled some internet way. But that is, so it's out there. At the break, we talked about, look, what is something that wealthy people think where a poor or broke person, I should really say a broke person, but poor falls under this category. It's a very inflammatory language. I realize that. And I'm not picking on you when I say this, but like, wake up to this.
This is a mindset check.
Yeah,
where
check.
Is your mindset?
What is something that a poor or broke person thinks that a wealthy person doesn't? A poor person broke is funny, but like the poor mentality, this is generational poverty mentality is,
yep.
I received money somehow, right? Whether it's through a safety system or even through employment,
paycheck,
lottery,
yeah.
Whatever it is. Okay. And I have money in my hand. I better spend this or it will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
The wealthy person says, I better be careful how I spend this. Or it will be gone.
These are true facts.
Super subtle difference, okay? It's been years ago since we had him on the show, but he's a good friend of mine who passed away. But Dr. John Gardini was a clinical psychologist, great guy. And I talked at length with him about this. And one of the things he pointed out is that the generational poverty mindset, and keep in mind what this means is these are people that tend to not only stay in poverty, but then train their kids to stay in poverty. Like learn how to work a resource structure, like a safety net structure. This is people that would try to basically stay within the welfare system and continuously mm-hmm. requalify for it rather than break out of that system and become financially independent of it. That mindset tends toward, because, and here's what happens, right? Because we never have any money, what that tells me is this is a scarce resource. So if I have it right now, I better take advantage of it.
Yep.
And so it's in my pocket. I better go spend this before it's gone.
And the other issue is categorizing what's important. What should I be spending my
money on? Oh, yeah, wants versus
because
needs.
I cannot tell you how many times as a teacher I saw a parent go buy an Xbox and the kid didn't have socks. Like, just categorizing what do we actually need versus what we want.
That's a host of issues right there.
Yeah.
Because I'd be willing to take a wild stab here that the parent bought the Xbox for them and not the kid.
Yep, 100%.
Right? And so at that point, what it really says is, and this is a horrible message to send to your children too. Hey, I'm selfish. My needs are going to be met and your needs don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm willing to do something where your needs are not going to be met. And that goes back to one of my original points, right? When people get married first and then have kids, the probability that the kids are wanted is a lot higher.
Yep.
Right? But this is an issue. So, right, anyway, enough social messaging here on the show today.
But it's going to tie back in. We're not going into the weeds yet.
So these folks, though, if that's the scenario, right, it's the spend the money while it's available, and then it's gone, and you're right back into self-fulfilling prophecy, right? The wealthy mindset views this as a precious resource. Now, at the break, Matt and I were talking a little bit, and I was thinking about what are ways to paint the extreme in the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the difference was, so...
You had a good analogy for this.
So I started with outdoor survival, right? And that's mm-hmm. what we were using. And it was, when I was a kid in Boy Scouts, one of the high-level outdoor survival skills, what they would do is they'd literally send you out with two matches and a pocket knife and say, you need to survive the night. I mean, there are more extreme situations than this, but this is the one I'm thinking of, and it's a good example, right? Send you out with a pocket knife and two wooden matches, strike anywhere matches, which I don't even know you can get those anymore.
Mm.
But that situation, imagine now if you have two matches and a pocket knife and you have to survive in the wilderness. You have all kinds of things to be worried about, right? Whether it's inclement weather, temperatures, shelter, food to an extent, protection, lots of things. So those matches are super important.
I bet you kept it in your pocket and kept it dry.
If you were unsuccessful starting a fire, you would be literally in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So you treated that very, it was a precious to take care of and make sure that you were very well prepared and that when you used those matches, it was very well thought out and well executed because the probability of success needed to be as high as possible.
Right.
Okay. So imagine the two different scenarios we gave financially. One person goes out and says, well, I've got matches and I need a fire right now. I better try right now because I've got the matches in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person, you know, so that's not precious. That is, let me utilize this as quickly as possible.
And your odds of starting that fire are probably a lot lower.
And you go, if you're wrong, you're in deep trouble.
Yep.
Right? And so your strategy and your tactics were clumsy
mm-hmm.
because you weren't looking out for the other contingencies.
Yep.
Okay. And that's what happens financially to people. And then we get into a whole host of other issues about whether or not people are just apathetic enough and the system provides enough that they're willing to simply subsist in that environment, right? If you're willing to just survive and whatever environment that gives you just enough to survive, that's acceptable to you. That's different, right? But I think the mentalities overlap and that's the issues. So what's the larger point, right? This is not rocket science,
yeah.
Right? It's not rocket science. I mean, take a look around. You can go to like Taco Bell right now and make 15, 16 bucks an hour.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, there is work available everywhere.
It's
you
true.
Want a job, it's out there. And if you're saying, well, but I get paid more to not work, then I will go, careful, right? This is the mental trap. You are maybe paid more to not work in the very short term.
Right.
But these are entry-level positions that should develop skills that are more marketable and more compensatable, and they will make you more than that.
And what's the job resume going to look like if there's multiple years of I didn't want to work?
Yeah. Well, that's just it, is this very, very short-sighted nature of, no, I'm not paid to work. And I go, well, yikes. There is a something called the law of compensation. It's not a real law. You won't find it written anywhere except in Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, or people that are referencing this. Really simple. Work your butt off. If your employer doesn't notice, somebody else will. Right? Somebody else will, and they will poach you away. They will hire you at... And the what you were not fairly paid where you were will be more than made up for, because that person will see and recognize that effort, and they will incentivize you to leave there to come to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked on this program before, like, if you don't leave, it's on you. If you work your butt off, but you're willing to just be abused, then it's on you, right?
Yep.
Oh, I just can't make the move. All right, well, then you structurally handicapped yourself. Can't help you. Okay, if you're just too insecure to upgrade your life, I can't help you. I can train you, but you got to act, right? So, the way out of poverty is really simple. Spend less than you make, continue to amass more skills, migrate up the food chain, and then save consistently early and often, and you will be surprised at how well this works out.
And work hard.
Yeah, well, the work hard is why you get paid, right?
Yeah.
It's now work hard, work smart. Okay.
Double it.
Shoveling harder isn't smarter when there's a backhoe right next to you.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to operate the backhoe.
Yes.
Right. And now you can magnify your efforts and you can minimize the strain on your body. This isn't rocket science either, folks. Right? I don't think I'm giving sage advice today on the program.
What's sad, though, is how many people you see with the shovel in hand. Yeah.
Well, it's just the idea that working harder doesn't make it more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real key, you know. And if folks can't understand that, like, just because you're willing to be a hard worker, your employer will pay you as much as they can. But, you know, at some point, the job isn't worth more, right?
Yep.
You know, it's like you can be the best pizza delivery guy out there. But the difference between the very best pizza delivery guy out there and
the guy
an average pizza delivery guy is not so huge that you can get paid 50 times more than the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because at some point, like, you can hire 30 guys for cheaper than you. So you would do that because it makes sense. Right? That's the issue at play here, is that there is a value to your work that caps out. So you have to continue to increase the value of your work through scarcity and leverage. Do things nobody else can do, or do things in such a way that you can leverage other tools or other people and other resources. Okay? It's really that simple. And the rest of it's just how are you going to play the game and get savvy with your taxes and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's the trick, is like, you really can save your way to prosperity in this country if you invest properly and systematically and so forth. And the only way that that's not going to work is if in the future our entire financial system, as you know it, completely fails, right? Which is a really interesting thing to discuss, because that's kind of my segue into the latter half of this show.
Everything
is like,
failing, that's the segue.
Yeah, I don't know that everything's failing, but what happens when, like, the foundation underneath us is starts to really shift? Like, are we seeing a foundational shift in our economy, in policy, in the future of investing, in the types of asset classes that we should invest in?
That sounds like a topic I want to explore.
Yeah, so that's the plan here. We're gonna unpack some of this now. So we got to take a break here, right?
Okay.
So as we do that, well, and you'll notice the music's not hitting instantly because, well, I guess we did because this is the national break where we got some news insight that's going to come in. But when we come back, we're going to talk about this. Like, how is the economy potentially changing? How's our financial system changing? And what does this mean to you as investors? But we got to take this break first. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
All right. Reminder also, podcast available. Go to, you know, your favorite podcast resource. Check out the True Wealth Show. Have not formally announced this yet, but there's a possibility that we will be changing the name of the show. So for now, continue to enjoy the True Wealth Show, of course. And it's I don't think a lot of the themes are going to evolve, right? We're still going to talk about, you know, True Wealth to me is all the financial stuff, but it's also the stuff in life that I think is the stuff that matters, right? Mm-hmm. Memories, relationships, all that stuff that we really need to be aware of. If you're just chasing the almighty dollar, you're missing the almighty point. Money's Ooh. Just how you trade your time.
Oh, man. That was a good one, David. So, coming with the heat.
Well, you know, what have you gained if you have all the money in the world and nobody to share it with? What have mm-hmm. you gained?
Yeah, right. I mean, that sounds pretty lonely.
Right? I mean, it really is. And even if you know, people say like, you can't really buy your friends. You can buy people that will hang out with you and be nice to you. But if the money's gone, are they still your friends?
But you can buy a jet ski, and you've never seen someone frowning while riding a jet ski.
Right?
Maybe it's a snowmobile.
Said, money doesn't buy happiness, but being broke is pretty sad. So it's the fun thing about the research is happiness does, it starts to plateau. That is like the game of more doesn't produce more happiness. Like early on, going from broke to less broke to not broke to having some discretionary income, the happiness curve really ramps up.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of a sudden life is better when you can do a little bit of fun.
Sure.
Right? And you're not just looking over your shoulder or worried about the next meal. Like life really is better.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. A lot of people think about that and they're like, oh, well, you know, hey, you're good. You've got this financial firm and a team. And so like, what do you know about it? Oh, I promise I know.
Like I've been there.
And sooner than you think, like more recently than you think, right? If you look back to, I moved to Roseburg in 2002 when I started January 4th of 2002. I interviewed on September 11th of 2001. So the day that the towers came down, that was the day I interviewed for my job that brought me to Roseburg. I grew up in Oregon, but I'd gone to North Carolina and had been 7 years out there. Finished college, started my career, and then the economy was in a slide and I moved back here. The first 2 years in financial services, I literally paid to work.
Wow.
Literally. You have something that you are required to carry to have an affiliation with most brokerage environments or investment environments is errors and omissions insurance. Like if you say something wrong by accident or you do paperwork wrong or something mm-hmm. and create a financial problem, you have insurance to hopefully cover you for right. an incident like that. And so my errors and omissions insurance premiums were $40 a week when I got started back in the 90s.
$40 a week?
$40 huh? a week for errors and omissions
insurance. Has it gotten
insurance.
More expensive or less expensive for you? I mean, that seems pretty steep.
More.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah, we don't talk about Bruno. So you know, we have a whole firm, right?
Yeah,
of people now. And so
having to cover everyone.
Yeah, you're covering the event that anywhere in the chain there could be a mistake, and we do our really, really darndest to never have those happen. But let's we don't need to be in the weeds of that. The story though is, you know, do we really relate to these things? And yeah, I worked nights. This is what the funny part of the story is. In college, I started my first business as an entrepreneur as a disc jockey. And I bought a mobile DJ system and I was DJing for the, you know, parties for the fraternities and sororities and the different campus organizations. And so that was my first deal, was playing music at parties.
Do you still have a mixing board?
Of course.
I love that. I love that.
I still have a bunch of speakers. I even have some lights still. I think I still have a fog machine. That's how ridiculous I am. Hasn't come out in years.
Wait till you see our next company party.
So anyhow, the point though was I literally worked nights to work days. I was a zombie, right? I was exhausted.
I bet.
And you can imagine being an early 20-something in the 2000 to 2002 market slide when I was starting my career. Nobody wanted to invest. The economy was messy. You know, the dot-com bubble had burst. It was pretty ugly. And so I was working nights to pay insurance and making no money. So I literally paid to work for 2 years.
Wow.
Paid to work for two years.
Did you ever come close to bailing?
Yes. I came very close to just giving up. And the washout rate's super high. I was offered a position that brought me to Roseburg, Oregon, where thankfully, while it was a low salary, it was still, I was a contractor, but I was given sort of a stipend equivalent. I had to buy my own insurance, pay all my self-employment tax, everything, but that's how it worked. And I started building from there. And I worked the next 8 years for other people, other organizations. And I worked where I started and I got poached away somewhere else. That's that law of compensation idea. And ultimately ventured out on my own after 2008, partnered with somebody else in town for a little while. When that relationship it didn't end badly at all, right? But it did end. Like, it was not going to be a partnership where the direction that we were growing our practices looked different. Mm-hmm. So that's when I ventured out on my own. But so the when I left out and went on to out on my own, it was super lean. I mean, so my wife's a teacher. I'm bringing mm-hmm. in next to zero. We have a newborn at home. It's terrifying.
Oh, I bet.
It's terrifying.
And you're probably trying to carry a mortgage in there somewhere.
We had
too.
A mortgage, yeah. And it was just freak out time. And in 2008, with the markets had collapsed again. It was the real estate collapse. Everything was is really scary. And now you fast forward from 2008 to present. It's been 14 years, but as of 2010, we had a negative net worth.
Jeez.
Right. And so a lot has changed. Right. And I'm not going to talk about my finances on air. That's not the point. Suffice it to say, we're qualified to give financial advice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we did it doing the same things that we talk about with our clients by, you know, building wealth, being smart, consistently contributing to retirement plans and chipping away at those things and deferring gratification.
That's a big piece.
Right. And so people see it today and they go, man, you're so lucky. You've got like a swimming pool or you got to go on a cool like vacation or something. You're so lucky. I'm like, yes, but it wasn't without tremendous sacrifice mm-hmm. along the way and deferred gratification. So everything Dave Ramsey says about, hey, live like no one else today so you can live like no one else tomorrow. That's legit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, every decision he makes, remember, he talks to people that are financially behind the eight ball. Like
sure.
If you've made so many dumb decisions and you can't trust yourself, do it his way. Mm-hmm. Right? Because like it's a no fail way to do it. But for the folks that have more financial discipline, understand the system and you know, understand how to put margin into their, like you can do it faster. Right? There are other ways to build wealth than the Dave Ramsey way. I'm not here to trash him at all. I think he's done a tremendous service for the industry and for many, many people.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
So I just don't think it's the only way. So let's talk about the way forward. And let's talk about the system and the shifting of what's going on here, because I think that's really important.
We're talking about like what's going on right now.
Well, right now, at the break, you know, I hijacked it. I do this. I go off on these rabbit trails, right? But it's radio, and it's hard. The listeners can't yell at me very well. I mean, I don't hear you when you shout at the radio. So you have to, you know, call us at 541-375-0898. Shout at me that way. But I see what may be systemic shifts in our economy, and they're really interesting. Some of them are concerning. Some of them are just going to be things that we have to
navigate.
Are
we talking inflation, deflation, stagflation? Where are you going with this?
So all of the above, right? That's I teased about. We've been on the show before. You guys, if you listen to the show with any regularity,
mm-hmm.
you've heard the lecture on what I will call Mind Your Shuns 101. Diversification, allocation, and correlation. Not beating that drum today.
Okay.
We're officially graduating to the Mind Your Shuns 201 coursework.
Oof.
Right? We're going into the more advanced case, and this is what, Matt?
I'm going to take a stab at this and say we're talking stagflation.
So inflation, deflation, stagflation, what to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's phrase that different. Not what to worry
about. What to be
about.
Mindful about.
Best choice, better, yes, better choice than I had. Mindful.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So first, what's inflation, Matt?
Too much money chasing too few goods.
Correct. And what's the result?
Prices go up and your purchasing power goes down.
Right. And there are two primary levers to how anything gets priced. And beyond that, we can parse out like what makes the levers move and everything else. But there's a very simple economic formula, right? If you're looking on a chart, it's a big X. One line of that X is the supply line, and the other side is the demand side.
Absolutely.
Right? And it really is this simple, okay? Matt, if what is there are two things that are really generating changes in price right now. Can you help our listeners think about what are some of the things that are influencing the price of goods out there right now?
Well, we've seen huge supply chain disruptions. I think we can all agree on that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and demand has been high as of late. Now, interest rates are changing, and that can start to affect, you know, the cost of capital. And that can start to change demand. But as we've seen it so far, there's been supply chain shortages. I mean, go look at a car lot, right?
Right. Like, yeah, you can't get stuff.
Right. You can't get the stuff.
So there's scarcity now.
Mm-hmm. And so even as – then this is just how I'm looking at it. Even as interest rates are changing and the cost access money goes up, does the demand actually change because the supply – is limited.
Okay. So let's use two different real life examples. Let's talk about oil and let's talk about housing.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So oil. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's assume for a minute that there's not a supply shortage, but rather a delivery of the supply intentionally being short, being minimized, if you will, right? So we have a shortage of oil.
Like the ban on Russian imports of oil.
Right. So some of this we've created, right? It's self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, just spare me the whole idea of, I realize peak oil and like we could run out of it and all that. That's not what I'm talking about. Like there's more in the ground that could be pumped right now if we just wanted to flood the market with more oil to change the price. So I'm not having the environmental discussion. We're just talking about today's snapshot of pricing, you know, not the long-term ecological issues. So, right now, price of gasoline is really high.
Yep.
Okay. Contributing factors include shortage of oil, some of it because of war, some of it because of policy.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean...
And then some of it because of we may not have the refinery capacity in certain senses to convert the oil into gasoline.
Well, and there's that lag, right? Like, if we want more oil, we can't just snap our fingers and... crank that puppy out and get it into the gas station pumps right away.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a 9 months lag. I think it's 9 months.
Could be months, yeah.
From when we start adding, you know, more drilling to refining it, to shipping it, to getting it. I think they said it's like 9 months, 6 to 9 months, if they really crank it out as fast as they can. Yeah.
So in simple terms, though, if there is not enough oil and everybody still wants it, the price goes up, right? So you see a shortage of oil and the demand is high.
Yep.
Okay. If we had tons of oil, like back at COVID when everything got locked down and nobody could drive anywhere.
Wasn't oil negative?
Oil went negative.
Yeah.
Right.
You could hardly give
the
stuff away.
2 years ago, they had no place to store it. It was still coming. You know, the supply chain was bringing the oil and nobody could take it. And so futures went negative for a little while. And that's an example, again, of supply imbalance, right? Supply and demand imbalance and pricing shifted around.
Planes weren't flying. People weren't traveling as much.
Right. Now, in the end, that natively balanced itself out. Now, housing's a different one. This one gets interesting, but I think it's really important. You want to know what the difference between oil and housing is, at least in the U.S. economy?
I do want to know the difference.
Great. Stick around, and we'll talk about it right after our last break.
Okay.
Exactly. All right, gang. We're going to be covering that last little bit, like housing and inflation, stagflation, deflation, all those other shuns. Right. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with...
Matt Dixon.
All right. So we're covering the last, the Shuns 201 course, right? And that's inflation, deflation, stagflation. And we had to get inflation figured out real quickly. And the last one I want to share is housing. I'm just going to run through this so we don't miss the definitions, right?
Okay.
The thing that makes housing so interesting is that it's a compound event, okay? Housing is not just about the supply of houses available, but it's also the demand is influenced by interest rates.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
And this is going to lead us into the understanding of inflation, deflation, or stagflation. Interest rates change how much money banks can lend and what it costs for somebody to borrow.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to buy a house, right? I really want that house, but I only have so much money. I need to borrow to pay for it. Okay, well, when rates are really low, you can borrow more money.
Yeah.
If rates are really high, you can't, which means you can't afford to pay for that house. So now, even though you really, really want it, that's not your demand. Demand is also restricted by your access to capital. Okay, so that's the thing, is that there's this leverage effect and the whole banking system's involved, right? You just go to the store and you want to buy bananas or something. It's like, how many dollars in my pocket? How many bananas are available? And if lots of people want bananas, then they're, you know, the price goes up. If you're the only one, the bananas are only going to be ripe for so long before they're not yellow
anymore.
They're
hitting the clearance tag,
right? And so, you know, if you want to wait until they're really ripe, you might get a smoking deal on bananas, because it's like they're going to be worth nothing pretty soon. So that's the idea. That's the nature of supply and demand, is it's in flux based on the number of dollars, the scarcity or availability of the product. And so interest rates totally influence the dollars in circulation. And what we're seeing right now is what? Federal Reserve is
tightening. Hiking rates, yeah.
They're tightening. That means their rates are going to go up. They're going to make lending it's going to be harder for banks to loan money out, or it's going to be more expensive for the people borrowing,
mm-hmm.
which is the equivalent of taking demand out of the market.
Yep.
So the Federal Reserve is stuck between a rock and a hard place. We have inflation right now, because we printed all this money for COVID, right? Just threw money everywhere. And for a little while, we talked about this on the program, for a little while, it just didn't get into circulation. It was mostly in institutional hands. But it started to hit the bottom line when people left the workforce, and then people needed employees. Wages started to go up because they had to get people off the sidelines and back to work. But now people want to buy stuff and the supply chains are all jacked out of whack. And so you can't get stuff, right? Can't find cars and trucks and so forth. So everybody's got to pay a premium for them, which raises the cost of everything, which also means the businesses that are dealing with these issues, right? They can't sell as many units. They need the profits. So they've got a strain. You end up with the pressure of inflation is more dollars chasing fewer goods, right? So we have both supply side disruption, reduction in supply, and money supply, lots of people with money in their hands. Both of those contribute to inflation. Deflation would be the opposite, right? There's not enough money. People start losing their jobs. They can't afford to pay for stuff. Demand goes away and the prices start to fall. But now the prices fall. People have to lay folks off. Those people leave the workforce. They don't have money now. And so they can't buy stuff. The prices have to fall further. You can get into a spiral of down as well. We have a whole nother program about whether or not the government should be interceding economically to try to stimulate economic activity or not. There's lots of economic discussion around that and lots of theory around it. Not for today's program. The weird one is stagflation, and that's the one that we need to watch out for right now, that a lot of economists are concerned about. If you look from like 1976 to 78, and again from, I think it was 74 to 76, and then again from 78 to 82 were two of the periods of time that I was doing a little homework before the show, and let me just confirm. Yeah, 74 and 75, and then in 78 to 82, two periods that have historically been referred to from economists as stagflation, which is high inflation, high unemployment, slow or negative economic growth.
Mm.
Okay, that's a really tough spot to be in when if the economy doesn't grow, how do you lift yourself out of a period where inflation is high and jobs are being lost and people can't afford to live in that economy?
It doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound good. So The trick here is, let me break it down into a simpler term for everybody to kind of lock away. Let's just throw out inflation or whatever, and let's call it something that makes sense. Everything around us is getting more expensive. And our dollars, like if they were weightlifters, it's atrophy, right? Our dollars aren't as strong. They can't buy as much as they used to because everything's getting more expensive. Right, it takes more dollars to buy the same stuff. That's the definition of inflation, by the way. But the stuff that's getting more expensive, that's the part that is where you need to be savvy about protecting your value, right? Assets are the things that reprice. So real estate, historically, and things that hold their value because it's a thing that will be worth more later because somebody still wants it. Right. So assets hold their value. Now, some assets have historically been depreciating assets, like vehicles. When you have a massive supply chain disruption and you can't buy vehicles, vehicles hold their value a lot better. But things that, this is where the discussion of gold comes in. I'm not crazy about it, but if we're going to deflate the currency, gold may have something there. Maybe. Right. But let's not jump to conclusions yet. It hasn't been a great investment for like 15 years.
Right.
So. Anyway, be asset sensitive if you want to adjust to an inflationary environment.
And what if they need more help navigating these tricky times, David? Yeah.
Since we're at the end of the program, I'm simply going to throw out the give our office a call, free consult. We're happy to help however we can. And we'll continue to unpack this in future programs. How do they reach our office?
541-375-0898.
All right, gang. Also, check us out at littlejohnfs.com, but we're out of time for now, so thanks for tuning in. Until next time, this has been David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
The program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.